Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. On the show today, we hear a report from Susan Shand and part of a podcast from the American Academy of Achievement. As always, we close the show with an American story. But first, African nations appear at the bottom of Transparency International's latest Corruption Perceptions Index. Transparency gave the East African nation of Somalia its lowest rating on the list for the 12th time in 12 years. Transparency is a non-governmental anti-corruption organization. It rated a total of 180 countries on how corrupt their governments and public services appear to be. The ratings are based on findings by experts and public opinion studies. The index uses a 100-point scale to show corruption levels. More than two-thirds of the countries received less than 50 points, with an average rating of 43. African nations had an average rating of 32 points. No nation has ever earned a perfect rating of 100. New Zealand leads the 2017 index with 89 points. Somalia received 9. Kate Mwaki is Transparency International's expert on Southern Africa. She says most African governments are failing to deal with corruption. However, she says there are some leaders who have invested in systemic action to change behavior. Mwaki spoke to VOA from Berlin, where Transparency International has its headquarters. She praised a number of African countries where corruption does not appear to be a major problem. They include Botswana, Seychelles, Cabo Verde, Rwanda, and Namibia. All five received a rating of over 50 in the latest index. She also noted that South Sudan is near Somalia at the bottom of the list. And Transparency identified rising corruption levels in Malawi, Madagascar, Mozambique, and Guinea-Bissau. Yet Mwaki suggested that things may change because the African Union and several African leaders have made clean governance a top goal. The past year will be remembered as a time when several African leaders accused of questionable activities left office. No fewer than 4 heads of state suspected of financial crimes resigned over the past 12 months. They are Gambia's Yahya Jammeh, Angola's José Eduardo dos Santos, Zimbabwe's Robert Mugabe, and Jacob Zuma of South Africa. A high-level corruption case also affected the government of Ethiopian Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn. He resigned this month following anti-government protests. Yet the corruption accused president of the Democratic Republic of Congo has repeatedly postponed elections. And the leaders of Uganda, Equatorial Guinea, Gabon, Congo, and Cameroon have all remained in power while being suspected of wrongdoing. Corruption investigations continue into current and former officials across the continent. The new president of South Africa, Cyril Ramaphosa, has made fighting corruption a major goal of his administration. This week, he called for an investigation of the behavior of top government officials, starting with himself. In Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari announced that all national property recovered in an anti-corruption campaign would be sold. He said the money from the sales will go to the country's treasury. Buhari is the chairman of the AU anti-corruption effort. Transparency International's Kate Muwaki says her group has noted and welcomed these developments, but she is urging people to keep up the pressure by shining light on suspected corruption.
An 1830 law forced thousands of American Indians from their lands in the southern United States to areas west of the Mississippi River. Expressions of support for the law are part of advertising for a new exhibit about Native Americans. The exhibit, called Americans, opened last month at the National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. It explores the use of American Indian imagery over the years. Two centuries ago, some people imagined a country free of American Indians. Others thought the removal of the Indians would lead to expanded wealth from cotton fields, where millions of blacks worked as slaves. Cecile Gantome, a co-curator of the exhibit, admits the show is provocative. Critics have praised the exhibit. They say it pushes the national debate over American Indian imagery and sports teams named the Chiefs, Braves, and Blackhawks. Washington is home to the National Football League's Washington Redskins. The team's colorful logo on one wall is meant to make visitors think about why it has been described as a unifying force in D.C. and offensive. Yet some people say the exhibit and its website fail to capture the violence and horror of the Indian Removal Act. The advertising is a strange way to explain an effort that lasted many years, said Ben Barnes, second chief of the Shawnee tribe. He noted that at one time, one-fifth of all federal money went to the act's enforcement. The law led to the deaths of thousands of people who were marched from their homes without full payment for the value of their land. And it affected far more tribes than the five described on the museum's website, Barnes said. It made it seem like it was a trivial matter that turned out best for everyone, he said. I cannot imagine an exhibit at the newly established African American Museum that talked about how economically wonderful slavery was for the South. Gantome said the website doesn't cover the subject in detail, and neither it nor the exhibit is meant to dismiss the experiences of American Indians. Instead, she said, it asks people to recognize and explore their relationship with American Indians. The exhibit has hundreds of images of American Indians on alcohol bottles, a bag of sugar, motor oil, and other forms of product advertising. Several videos show how the imagery is a large part of American television and film. But when historic or cartoonish images are the only pictures people have of what it means to be Native American, they can't imagine American Indians in the modern world, said Julie Reed. Reed is a history professor at the University of Tennessee and a member of the Cherokee tribe. Even when I'm standing in front of students identified as a Cherokee professor, making the point from day one that I'm still here and other Cherokee people are still here, I still get midterm exams that talk about the annihilation of Indian peoples, she said. Gantome said that while Native people have strong histories in other countries, the United States is more likely to focus on images of them. The exhibit expands on what is well known to most Americans: the Trail of Tears, Pocahontas, and the Battle of Little Bighorn. A film on the American celebration of Thanksgiving starts with a once widely used television screen test showing an Indian head. It goes on to question the importance of Thanksgiving when the country already had Independence Day. Eden Sloan, a graduate student in museum studies, said she liked the exhibit's design and interactive touch tables. I think the exhibit was carried out well, and it definitely makes you think of Native American imagery, she said. When I see images like that, I'll think more about where it came from. Reed, the University of Tennessee professor and Cherokee woman, fears people will get the wrong idea about the Indian Removal Act from the website. Yet, she plans to visit the museum. Reed said she will go because it is important to be fair and look at it before it is criticized. She added the exhibit may be better than the website. I'm Susan Shand.
Next up, we listen to another What It Takes podcast. The subject today is the famous British runner, Roger Bannister.
Well, I've always been very impatient, and I frankly found life, age 10, in this suburb and at this school, boring. And I can remember age 9 having the awful thought, as it seems now, looking back on it, a war. That should liven things up a bit. The first air raid siren sounded when I was still in London, and I ran back from the park where I'd been playing, home, hearing this siren, and of course, nothing happened for 6 months. We've got what we call the phony war. But when I went to Bath, there were some reprisal bombings, and our house was actually bombed, and the roof fell in, and we were sitting in the basement, under the stairs of the basement, and we were quite safe.
Yes.
But it brought home realization, in two nights, 400 people were killed in this relatively small town. And so on the third night, I persuaded my parents that we should leave. There was no raid expected. But as it had happened on two nights, we went out of Bath and camped overnight about 4 miles away in a wood. But my discovery in Bath was of the countryside. I loved the countryside. I cycled from the age of sort of 10 to 15 all around Bath and Somerset and Cheddar Gorge and the sites of castles and country houses. And I remember that as a time of freedom, often perhaps a bit solitary, but great excitement of discovery and exploration. With my impatience, I think I enjoyed running to get about more quickly, and I never found it any effort.
Now it's time for an American story. Today we hear A Pair of Silk Stockings by Kate Chopin. Here is Barbara Klein.
Little Mrs. Summers one day found herself the unexpected owner of $15. It seemed to her a very large amount of money. The way it filled up her worn money holder gave her a feeling of importance that she had not enjoyed for years. The question of investment was one she considered carefully. For a day or two, she walked around in a dreamy state as she thought about her choices. She did not wish to act quickly and do anything she might regret. During the quiet hours of the night, she lay awake considering ideas. A dollar or two could be added to the price she usually paid for her daughter Janie's shoes. This would guarantee they would last a great deal longer than usual. She would buy cloth for new shirts for the boys. Her daughter Mag should have another dress. And still, there would be enough left for new stockings, 2 pairs per child. What time that would save her in always repairing old stockings. The idea of her little family looking fresh and new for once in their lives made her restless with excitement. The neighbors sometimes talked of the better days that little Miss Summers had known before she had ever thought of being Mrs. Summers. She herself never looked back to her younger days. She had no time to think about the past. The needs of the present took all her energy. Mrs. Summers knew the value of finding things for sale at reduced prices. She could stand for hours making her way, little by little, toward the desired object that was selling below cost. She could push her way if need be. But that day she was tired and a little bit weak. She had eaten a light meal. No, she thought about her day. Between getting the children fed and the house cleaned and preparing herself to go shopping, she had forgotten to eat at all. When she arrived at the large department store, she sat in front of an empty counter. She was trying to gather strength and courage to push through a mass of busy shoppers. She rested her hand upon the counter. She wore no gloves. She slowly grew aware that her hand had felt something very pleasant to touch. She looked down to see that her hand lay upon a pile of silk stockings. A sign nearby announced that they had been reduced in price. A young girl who stood behind the counter asked her if she wished to examine the silky leg coverings. She smiled as if she had been asked to inspect diamond jewelry with the aim of purchasing it. But she went on feeling the soft, costly items. Now she used both hands, holding the stockings up to see the light shine through them. Two red marks suddenly showed on her pale face. She looked up at the shop girl. "Do you think there are any size 8.5 among these?" There were a great number of stockings in her size. Mrs. Summers chose a black pair and looked at them closely. $1.98, she said aloud. "Well, I will buy this pair." She handed the girl a $5 bill and waited for her change and the wrapped box with the stockings. What a very small box it was. It seemed lost in her worn old shopping bag. Mrs. Summers then took the elevator, which carried her to an upper floor into the ladies' rest area. In an empty corner, she replaced her cotton stockings for the new silk ones. For the first time, she seemed to be taking a rest from the tiring act of thought. She had let herself be controlled by some machine-like force that directed her actions and freed her of responsibility. How good was the touch of the silk on her skin! She felt like lying back in the soft chair and enjoying the richness of it. She did for a little while. Then she put her shoes back on and put her old stockings into her bag. Next, she went to the shoe department, sat down, and waited to be fitted. The young shoe salesman was unable to guess about her background. He could not resolve her worn old shoes with her beautiful new stockings. She tried on a pair of new boots. She held back her skirts and turned her feet one way and her head another way as she looked down at the shiny, pointed boots. Her foot and ankle looked very lovely. She could not believe that they were a part of herself. She told the young salesman that she wanted an excellent and stylish fit. She said she did not mind paying extra as long as she got what she desired. After buying the new boots, she went to the glove department. It was a long time since Mrs. Summers had been fitted with gloves. When she had bought a pair, they were always bargains, so cheap that it would have been unreasonable to have expected them to be fitted to her hand. Now she rested her arm on the counter where gloves were for sale. A young shop girl drew a soft leather glove over Mrs. Summers' hand. She smoothed it down over the wrist and buttoned it neatly. Both women lost themselves for a second or two as they quietly praised the little gloved hand. There were other places where money might be spent. A store down the street sold books and magazines. Mrs. Summers bought two costly magazines that she used to read back when she had been able to enjoy other pleasant things.
She lifted her skirts as she crossed the street. Her new stockings and boots and gloves had worked wonders for her appearance. They had given her a feeling of satisfaction, a sense of belonging to the well-dressed crowds. She was very hungry. Another time, she would have ignored the desire for food until reaching her own home. But the force that was guiding her would not permit her to act on such a thought. There was a restaurant at the corner. She had never entered its doors. She had sometimes looked through the windows. She had noted the white tablecloths, shining glasses, and waiters serving wealthy people. When she entered, her appearance created no surprise or concern, as she had half feared it might. She seated herself at a small table. A waiter came at once to take her order. She ordered 6 oysters, a chop, something sweet, a glass of wine, and a cup of coffee. While waiting to be served, she removed her gloves very slowly and set them beside her. Then she picked up her magazine and looked through it. It was all very agreeable. The tablecloths were even more clean and white than they had seemed through the window, and the crystal drinking glasses shined even more brightly. There were ladies and gentlemen who did not notice her, lunching at the small tables like her own. A pleasing piece of music could be heard, and a gentle wind was blowing through the window. She tasted a bite, and she read a word or two, and she slowly drank the wine. She moved her toes around in the silk stockings. The price of it all made no difference. When she was finished, she counted the money out to the waiter and left an extra coin on his tray. He bowed to her as if she were a princess of royal blood. There was still money in her purse, and her next gift to herself presented itself as a theater advertisement. When she entered the theater, the play had already begun. She sat between richly dressed women who were there to spend the day eating sweets and showing off their costly clothing. There were many others who were there only to watch the play. It is safe to say there was no one there who had the same respect that Mrs. Summers did for her surroundings. She gathered in everything, stage and players and people, in one wide sensation. She laughed and cried at the play. She even talked a little with the women. One woman wiped her eyes with a small square of lace and passed Mrs. Summers her box of candy. The play was over, the music stopped, the crowd flowed outside. It was like a dream ended. Mrs. Summers went to wait for the cable car. A man with sharp eyes sat opposite her. It was hard for him to fully understand what he saw in her expression. In truth, he saw nothing, unless he was a magician. Then he would sense her heartbreaking wish that the cable car would never stop anywhere, but go on and on with her forever.
That was A Pair of Silk Stockings by Kate Chopin. We have come to the end of today's show, but we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.